In this episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, Rob and I are going to be talking about tools you'll need for your bootstrap startup. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 281. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at launching software products. Whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Mike.
And I'm Rob.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. What are you doing this week, Rob?
You know, I'm getting excited for MicroConf. It's just a couple weeks out in Las Vegas, and we have a pretty cool speaker lineup I'm excited about. A lot of new names this year, names that folks may not have heard of, but that, you know, either you or I have seen speak elsewhere, or we have been highly recommended by MicroConf attendees that we trust. And so there's folks like Claire Liu from Know Your Company, who did, I believe, a BOS Lightning talk. We have Amir Kella from Kinotopia, who has spoken several places. And actually Scott Nixon from Happy Herbivore recommended him. And I'm excited about his story. The more I talk to him on Skype, because a lot of people haven't heard the story of Kinotopia, but it's pretty fascinating. We have Tracy Osborne from Waiting Lovely and Patrick Campbell from Price Intelligently. And of course, Des Trainer from Intercom, which is cool. And there's several others and some names that you'd recognize as well. But it's kind of cool because I feel like it's a bit of a sleeper year in terms of like new, brand new, big name folks. But I'm excited about the possibility of the quality of these talks that I think people will come across with.
Yeah, I think it's interesting how at some conferences you look at the lineup, especially early on, and either you're attracted to it or you really notice that like there's a bunch of standout names that you've heard before and they're high profile names. And I totally agree with you that I think that a lot of the names that we have on the docket this year are not probably as well known, but like the speaking quality is still there. Like the stories are still going to be really interesting. So it'll be great to see how things turn out this year and what comes out of that.
Yeah, I mean, and I think of it in terms of, you know, Joanna Wiebe, when she first spoke at MicroConf, she was like an up-and-comer at the time in this space. Brennan Dunn was at the time. I mean, he first spoke, it was like 4 years ago, maybe 4 or 5. I mean, it was a while ago. We've had several folks like Josh Pigford was still running PopSurvey, Samuel Hulick, you know, before he was doing it. I mean, there's just a lot of folks who are now more prominent in our space who have graced the stage before they were big names. And that's how I feel about several of the speakers here. I have a feeling that they will be becoming more well-known, partially as from taking the stage at MicroConf. You know, you just get some name recognition there, but they're kind of already headed on that trajectory. And I think we're just helping them along. How about you? What's going on?
Well, a couple of days ago, I sent out what I hope is going to be my final update to the people who have prepaid for BlueTick before I start onboarding them in the next couple of weeks. And right now we're testing and trying to work out some of the different kinks in the application and make sure that the basic usage scenarios and the basic workflow that people will go through to use the product are in line with not only expectations, but everything's working and, you know, we're properly handling everything. But a few minor issues here and there, and we're kind of dogfooding it internally, but it's looking good so far.
And your deadline that you've set for that is April 1, is that correct?
Yeah, and unfortunately, there's a lot of things that play into that unfortunate part of it, but April 1st, obviously, it's April Fool's Day, and it wasn't intentional. It just happened to be Friday of, I think I counted out like a certain number of weeks, and it was either 12 or something like that, and I said, okay, I want to have it done by this time, and that just happened to be the day, and it's also 2 days before MicroConf
well,
starts.
Well, and you picked that date before we scheduled MicroConf, I think.
Yeah, I kind of did. So that's not exactly true. Like, I think that we knew what the dates were going to be for MicroConf, mm-hmm. but it was kind of leading up to it. It's like, I just did the calculation and I thought to myself, well, it would either be the 12 weeks or I could try to rush things. So I'd have to do it in less time, which I didn't really think was all that feasible. I knew that I'd have to start cutting things and making concessions or whatever. And then if I pushed it, then I would have to push it by probably at least 2 weeks, mm-hmm. just because the way that MicroConf fell. So it's like, well, I'll try and get it done beforehand.
All right, but you're on track right now?
Yeah, so far. It's still 2.5 weeks to go, but by the time this episode comes out, it'll be a week and a half.
Right. That's cool. And for folks who don't know what BlueTick is, what's the one or two sentence explanation of what it does?
Yeah, so it's essentially a sales automation tool that allows you to follow up with people in an automated fashion so that, or actually the system follows up for you so that you don't have to. So as opposed to other tools like Boomerang or followup.cc, you can have them ping you and essentially remind you that you need to follow up with somebody, but this will do it on your behalf so that you don't have to. So obviously there's very distinct places where you would use it in your sales workflow, but the idea is to help move somebody from one stage of your sales funnel to the next.
Very nice. As for me, I'm on the drip front. February was a good month. In fact, I'm pretty sure it was the best month we've had of growth. And that followed up the launch of workflows in January. So all the trials, or some of the trials, you know, converted then. And it seems to have kicked us up to a next stage of growth, which is good. And we also, kind of coincidentally, it didn't have anything to do with that growth, but we hired two people in the past couple of weeks. I'd been trying to hire a senior Rails developer since, I don't know, maybe November, December. And it just happened to, we happened to find him right towards the end of February. And then we also figured out we needed another person in customer success. So hopefully it's the last hiring that we'll be doing for a while, because it is time consuming and not necessarily the goal of Drip is not to have a lot of people, right? We're not going for headcount like funded startups are, but it is nice to have finally, because those were open loops, you know, they were just continually in my Trello board to like find a person to help with this and find the next developer and stuff. And now that is closed out, it feels good to have that kind of behind us and we can all basically move faster. It's just able to handle the workload and get more features built and get more people onboarded. So things are going good.
So earlier we were talking briefly about MicroConf. James Carberry from Sweetfish Media had me on the Conference Notes podcast that you can check out. We'll link that up into the show notes. He was interviewing me about MicroConf and what the takeaways were from MicroConf 2015. So we talked a little bit about that. And again, if you're interested, we'll link that up in the show notes.
Sounds good. What are we talking about today?
So today what we're going to be talking about is some of the different tools that you'll need for running a bootstrap startup. And we want to talk a little bit about what's reasonable, what's not, and essentially how to allocate your money in your startup. And the major focus here is mostly on tools, not necessarily things like the cost of doing business and getting insurance or office space or other physical things that you need to run your business, like maybe computers or whatever. But what we're really trying to do is focus on the things that you'll need to use on a monthly basis. So obviously that cuts out a lot of those different things that I just talked about, but we're also actively cutting out things like software tools, because I think that depending on your tech stack, that's going to vary pretty dramatically between different startups. So we decided to avoid that as a just kind of a matter of choice.
Software development tools, right? The actual stuff you need to build software, like maybe source control on your editor, and if you need Microsoft licenses to IDEs and stuff like that. But we will be talking a lot about software that you need subscriptions to, SaaS apps and stuff like that.
Exactly, exactly. We also divide this into two different phases, I'll call them. The first one is pre-revenue, and the second one's post-revenue. So obviously in the pre-revenue, we're going to be talking about some of the different tools that you'll want to look at, or some general guidelines that you can follow in deciding which tools to use for your business. And then there's also the post-revenue stage, where we talk a lot about the different categories or classifications of tools that you might be interested in using for your startup and what some of the different options are.
Cool, let's dive in.
So in the pre-revenue stage, the emphasis here is essentially making sure that your business has enough money to get through to the point where you have a source of revenue for the business on an ongoing basis. If you spend, let's say, $100,000 to try and get your startup off the ground, but you only bring in $5,000, then clearly that business is not probably going to fly. So the idea here is to spend as little money as possible, yet still get your products out the door so that you can make more money, so that you can feed that back into the business. But if you're spending far faster than you're able to acquire money, then chances are really good that that business is just never going to go anywhere. And at that point, you're probably better off finding a different business to use, a different product to offer, a different service to offer. But in this case, in general, what we're looking at is the idea that if you're spending more than $50 a month for any individual tool or any individual service, then you might want to take a really hard look at that and figure out, is that really necessary for your business pre-revenue?
Yeah, I mean, a good example of this, I think, is a tool like a Mixpanel or a Kissmetrics that start around $150. And obviously, there are free plans and stuff, but if you were to start paying for them, I really haven't installed either one of those when I've had a pre-revenue product. Once you get even $1,000 or $2,000 in revenue, it becomes easier to justify spending that kind of money. Obviously, there are great insights you can get out of that software, but if you install that for months and months and you don't have enough revenue to pay for it, that one always feels kind of like an iffy proposition. Now, all this comes back to how much money do you have to start the business? Because let's say you raise an angel round. This probably doesn't apply to you, as we said in the title, like we called this tools you need for your bootstrapped startup. So these guidelines may apply less less to that. Or if you really self-funded and you do have 20, 30 grand in the bank that you're using to kind of get this thing going, that could also be an exception to this. You may want to move faster. If you recall, when we were building and launching Drip, I had, you know, other apps that were able to bankroll it. And so we wanted to move faster. And so we did spend more money than maybe these guidelines suggest. But I think that if you truly are working a day job and launching something on the side in your nights and weekends, I think a good guideline is about a $50 topper for any individual tool or service that you're going to use. And getting started, like on day one, you know, if you're writing code, really the only couple things that I can think of that are absolutely critical aside from your development tools are some web hosting and payment processing. And a lot of other stuff you can get by with, limp along essentially with the free stuff like the Google Analytics and the Webmaster Tools and the basic things, especially as a one-person shop, which will probably be at this time. There are a lot of tools that have a free plan for a single kind of a solo founder or a single user. And so you're going to want to take advantage of those in this early stage.
Yeah, and another example, or a very specific example of one of those things, like, is being able to collect email addresses and signing up for $200 email marketing platform when you don't have any revenue and you're really not getting enough traffic to drive to that to be able to collect those email addresses. You can get by with a free MailChimp account, for example, and that will at least get you started. You don't need to spend a ton of money on these tools, especially when the free plans will suffice while you're trying to figure out whether that business is going to work at all. The second guideline for a pre-revenue company is to not spend more than $200 a month across all of the different tools that you're using. And the idea behind this is that if you are really launching something on the side and you, let's say you're full-time employed someplace else and you're just doing this on the side, then it can be kind of difficult to go through all of those tools and really pay attention to all of them or give them the attention and care that they need in order to make them work for your business. Chances are you've got a lot of other things going on. You've got all the development going on. You're still trying to figure out what that market looks like. And if you really have that many tools that you're looking at, chances are good that you're probably not focusing on the right things. You really need to be talking to the customers and spending a lot more time in those areas and building what it is that they want, as opposed to trying to use all these different tools to optimize something when, quite frankly, you don't have the traffic or the level of interest or attention from people that you really need in order to get to make that optimization work.
I think that's a good point, that tools can and will be a distraction if you want to chase down the next shiny object. It's like, stop reading Product Hunt and Hacker News and looking at all the shiny new marketing SaaS or development SaaS that's coming out. Focus on you building what you have instead and just use the basics, like we've already said. I mean, hosting, payment processing, maybe a landing page provider. And that's probably about it. I mean, I think I'm even thinking back to Drip. And again, we had revenue from other products that were being able to back it. But we had hosting, and then I had a WP Engine account for the blog and the knowledge base and payment processing and maybe one or two other things, but it was very minimal because we're talking on a recurring basis, right? So what we're not talking about here, let's dive into the exceptions. It's still with pre-revenue. We have three exceptions. One of them is paid ads. And that's not what we're talking about at all here, right? Because we're talking about tools on a recurring basis. So paid advertising to gather information or to get in front of people is an exception to this, because I believe that spending money to learn things is so valuable at this pre-revenue stage. Now, ideally, you'd be able to run a reasonable test for about $100 to $200 per test. Long-term, as you get bigger, some tests may require several thousand dollars before you try to scale it up. But that's not what you're trying to do at this point. You're trying to find cheap clicks and split test value propositions and learn more and build a small list and that kind of stuff. And for a few $100, you should be able to do that. And this will let you figure out what you're doing right and what you're doing wrong so that you can leverage that information as you're building the product.
The second exception here is also like the legal or accounting fees to get set up as a business. But quite frankly, you can probably get by without setting up like a full-blown corporation or doing any of that stuff before you even have a product that's out the door. I mean, you can do a lot of things, and depending on who you're working with your CPA, you may be able to write off a lot of those development costs once you have gone down the path of getting an official corporation or officially filing a DBA or something along those lines. clients. So a lot of things that you can just backdate those. And again, you have to talk to your CPA about how that would work for your business. But the reality is a lot of those costs are pretty minimal anyway. And especially in the long term of your business, over the course of a business, you're probably going to be spending hundreds of thousands of dollars, and not being able to write off $1,000 or $2,000 from the very beginning is probably not going to break the bank for you.
Yeah. And we're not lawyers or CPAs, obviously, but I will tell you that every business that I've started and every product that I've launched, I have pushed off the legal and the accounting stuff as long as I possibly could. Aside from, you know, in terms of accounting, I mean, I've done like the bookkeeping using tools like Xero that we'll talk about later, or less accounting, but the legal stuff of actually getting that S-Corp set up, or the whatever it is, the LLC, it all depends on your risk tolerance. But boy, I've always tried to push that off as long as possible, because if you don't have revenue and you're spending money and time setting all that stuff up, you're just detracting from your ability to grow. And I think the third exception in this pre-revenue stage is contract labor, of course. If you're hiring out work, you're hiring folks, let's say, on Upwork, or even just, you know, contractors you know through your network, it is harder to do this one on the cheap. You can find cheaper people, but you're going to have to spend more time managing them and correcting their work in general. Realistically, though, there has to be a limit on these contractor costs, right? If you're sinking 20 grand into product development for something that doesn't have any customers or a pre-launch list, like, you're probably going down the wrong path. But if you have interest and you have that launch list and you're in communication with people, that gives you the confidence to spend more and more money. And so when people come and ask, we'll often get the question of like, how much does it cost to build a mobile app? Or how much should I pay to build my SaaS MVP, or that kind of stuff? The loose range that I typically throw out is 5 to 10K. And obviously, it depends on what you're building, and it depends on how much software development and management experience you have, because then that dictates the kind of the level and the seniority of the developer you're going to be able to hire, which is going to impact the cost of it and all that. But if you have a lot of marketing skills and you have a list and you know what you're doing, then of course, dropping a lot more money than 20K might make sense. But if this is your first time and you're doing it on nights and weekends, then you really need to keep a tight constraint on these things. And especially in the early days, I mean, I was in the single digit thousands. That was my comfort level of how much I would drop before I would get someone in and at least paying me something for the product.
So I guess with those things said about the pre-revenue stage, let's move on to post-revenue. And one of the differentiations here that I feel like we really need to make is the fact that when you're talking about a pre-revenue business, there's a very finite time window during which that pre-revenue business is sitting. So it's easy to look at a lot of different examples of those types of businesses because it's all in this very, very tightly defined range. But when you're talking about post-revenue, that could mean anything from $1 a month to $1 million a month. You know, and obviously, I think most of the time when we're talking about our listeners or the audience that we're referring to is generally businesses that operate up into the 5, 6, or 7 figures a year. So with that kind of stuff in mind, it's also very difficult to generalize and say, well, you should only be paying $25 or $30 a month on this particular thing, because depending on whether you're closer to $1,000 a month or $100,000 a month, you may be paying significantly more based on the requirements for your business. So most of the guidelines and things that and prices that we're going to throw out are kind of entry level, but you could also extrapolate those a little bit because some of them are based on per user pricing, and you may have one user or you may have 15 or 20. So those prices can fluctuate a little bit, but we'll at least give some guidelines around starting points.
So let's kick it off with probably the most important tool for a startup that's obviously going to be doing stuff online. It's your hosting. And this cost is going to depend a lot on your app, your infrastructure requirements, but I like to ballpark between $50 and $200 a month. And again, this is post-revenue. So this is when you're not on shared web hosting anymore, right? At this point, you've beefed up and you have some type of virtual machine, whether it's on Rackspace or an Amazon EC2, or you're on a Heroku instance. That's when your post-revenue, you feel more comfortable outsourcing some of the management of this and paying a little more to get a couple of servers at least to kind of have high availability and good performance. And I think that a decent ballpark when you're kind of just ramping up is between $50 and $200 a month.
Yeah, and I think that's $50 to $200 a month could also be per server as well. So if you have 10 servers, you might be paying $2,000 or $3,000 for the servers that you have. But again, it comes down to what your app is. And I think something else that kind of falls under this bucket is whether or not you're running your sales website at the same place as your app is. And I think that those are two probably different things. So you might run your sales website on WordPress and have it hosted at WP Engine. Well, a one site over at WP Engine is going to run you $30 a month, but you can also kind of upgrade your plan to the next level, which is $100 a month. So again, these are just kind of roundabout numbers, but they do give you an idea of what the starting points look like and kind of what's reasonable.
Right. And pre-revenue, you can be, I mean, a lot of stuff I've launched is on shared hosting for $20-$30 a month. And then when you, as you get towards launch, or maybe after you get 5 or 10 people paying you for it, then you move to this better hosting, basically, where you have your own servers. And again, if you're a hardcore developer and you have some a little bit of money in the bank, you're probably just going to start with this level of the $50 to $200. But it's kind of a bummer when you're sitting there coding for 4 or 5 months and you want to have a landing page up and you're paying $50 or $100 a month just to do that. So that's never made much sense to me.
Next category is payroll. So if you have gotten to the point where you are post-revenue, and let's just kind of assume you've even gotten past the post-revenue part, you start to go full-time, one of the things that you really kind of need to look at is payroll. And I've looked at payroll providers over the years and tried out a couple of different ones. The one that I settled on recently was Gusto. They used to be called Zen Payroll, but they changed their name probably about 5 or 6 months ago. I have no idea what the rationale behind that change was, but they did change it. So something like this should probably run you around $40 to $50 a month. Some of the larger, I'll say more entrenched players, that if you're not eligible for Gusto based on where you live, you might have to go with someone like ADP or Paychex. Those are US-based companies. I don't know what the options are in other countries, but either one of those is probably going to run you anywhere from $50 to $75 a month. And what I've noticed about those types of companies is that they have a tendency to quote you a price, and then they will essentially tack on additional fees for doing things like, oh, we're going to overnight you your paperwork, so that it's there on payday. And it's like, well, everything's direct deposit. I don't need you to overnight it, but they'll do it anyway. And it's an extra $10 or $20 per pay period. That's how they do that. So it can get pricey, which is kind of why I gravitated much more towards Gusto, because it's just a flat rate. Everything's taken care of online. They also take care of 1099s for you, so you don't have to worry about that as well, especially if you're going through contractors that are outside of like a platform like Upwork.
Yeah, don't do your payroll yourself. That's insane. I've known some small businesses that do that, and there's just no reason to do that anymore. I used Paychex for several years. Eventually, their payroll started having a lot of errors. They did a really good job early on, and it was great. And I think I was paying about $100 a month, and it was totally worth it. And then more and more errors as we scaled up, and it was all via phone. There was like, you could have some reports online, but it was really janky, and you couldn't update anything online. So I just had to be on the phone all the time, and that's just not, it doesn't work into my workflow. So the fact that Gusto, formerly Zen Payroll, is fully online and is as good as they are. And they're cheap. I think it's like $24 a month and then $5 per employee, and it's unlimited payrolls or something. So if you're one or two people, it's like in the 20s or 30s. So this is a no-brainer.
They recently updated their pricing too. They actually went up a little bit.
Oh, did they?
If you got,
did they grandfather
us? Yeah, I think it's, I don't know. I'm grandfathered, I think.
Too.
Yeah.
Cool. So the next category is video hosting. And obviously, you know, you're gonna have some demo videos. You're going to have some marketing videos. I mean, you're just going to have a need for videos as you scale up even a little bit. YouTube is free, but you have so little control and the player is not very nice. It's not very attractive, I should say. And at the end of your video, they pop up 20 related videos that are like from other people. So it takes you out of what you're doing. It's not very professional. So to me, again, this post-revenue, as soon as you have some revenue, you're going to want to go with someone like Wistia, which is about $240 a year, or a Vimeo, which is $200 a year, or a Sprout Video, which is in that range. I think they might have a $10 or $15 a month plan, because you're just going to get so much more control. You're going to get better metrics. A lot of them have email capture built in, where you can gate a marketing video at a certain point, or a valuable video that you want people to watch. You can feature gate it to where, in essence, they have to enter an email to get past that. And that can go directly into a provider, you know, like a Drip or a MailChimp or something. So this is one I hadn't really thought of early on because I don't know, it just kind of slipped under the radar. But as soon as we had video that needed to appear on our website, which is SSL, we could only use a few providers. And since I didn't want to use YouTube, it became expensive pretty quick, actually. I remember we started off with like a $20 plan. And then by the time we had a few videos, it was up to 50. And I think I pay either 100 or 100 and might be a little more than that, like 120 a month to Wistia because of just the volume of bandwidth and the features. We needed some specific features that are feature gated up to that point. So it's not outrageous for sure, but when you can start at $20 a month, that's a pretty good way to go.
And I will point out that I think both Wistia and Vimeo have free plans that you can get on if you want to get started with those services on day one. So if you are pre-revenue, you can use those services. Obviously, if there is feature gating, so if you get to a point where you're scaling and you're using a lot of bandwidth or there's other features that you want to be able to use, you may have to start paying for it. But again, the pricing isn't completely outrageous either. So the next category is email marketing tools. And by email marketing, really what I mean is essentially capturing email addresses from people and being able to send out bulk emails. So a lot of different tools fall under this bucket. So MailChimp, AWeber, Constant Contact, those types of tools. But really the idea here is that you want something that is going to allow you to send out mass emails to your mailing list.
This is actually one of the others that if you're pre-revenue, this was the other thing that we had, right? I talked about hosting and payment providers. And email marketing would be the other one. And in the very early days, you know, if you're really just collecting emails and you need to send a broadcast every once in a while, like MailChimp's not a bad tool for that. But it's only once you actually segment the list and try to do anything of any complexity that you might run into problems and need to outgrow it. And that's when you move into these email marketing automation tools, which, you know, are going to run you, say, $50 a month and up. And that's like a Drip, an Ontoport, an Infusionsoft. And when you're post-revenue, this is pretty much a necessity, right? It's pretty rare that you're going to grow and scale on a basic email marketing tool that doesn't have the automation stuff baked into it.
The next category is cash management software or services. So in virtually every case, if you're looking for any sort of bookkeeping software, I would probably recommend Xero. It's X-E-R-O. They have an online subscription. You go out there and it's very easy to use. And it generally follows accepted best practices for accounting. So if you know anything about accounting, you can pretty much do anything that you would probably need to do inside of Xero. There's also other options out there. So obviously QuickBooks Online is probably the big player in this particular space. They do have QuickBooks Desktop Edition, and then there's also other tools out there like Less Accounting and Outright. And there's other ancillary tools that I would probably put underneath this category, such as Baremetrics or FirstOfficer.io that allow you to analyze the incoming payments. I might also throw PayPal underneath this, and I would also put something like FreshBooks or Expensify for doing invoices and receipt tracking. So generally speaking, though, most of those tools should not cost you very much, $20, $30, $40 a month at the most for each individual one. But being able to know how much money is coming in, how much is going out is going to save you a ton of time at the end of the year, especially if you're post-revenue and you have to start tracking how much did I spend, how much did I make, how much can I write off, all the reports and stuff that you need out of that. If you don't have it tracked, it can be very difficult. If you have a very simple business, you can do it in Excel. But once you start getting complicated with anything, you get lots of transactions, it's really hard to track all that stuff outside of Excel.
Yeah, we live in the golden age of starting a business because the fact that you can get all the power of the tools you just mentioned and you don't need to install a server because it's all SaaS and you can pay, like you said, $10, $20, $30 a month for these is just amazing because 10 or 15 years ago, it was so much of a hassle. You installed desktop software and then you had to back the files up and the desktop software wasn't very good. And when you change computers, you had to, you know, try to remember to get the file. I mean, it was so much of a hassle. So this is a much better approach. The next category, it's actually, we have it as two items. I'm going to kind of lump it into one. The first one is like website traffic analytics and the next one after that is advanced analytics. So for just basic analytics, Google Analytics is great. Google Webmaster Tools, Clicky, which is at getclicky.com, is $10 a month. And these are, you know, they'll show you your unique visitors and kind of the aggregate data. And these are really a no-brainer for getting started. And you should have them, if for nothing else to have the historical data, you should have these installed. And then the advanced side is going to be a tool more like a Mixpanel or a Kissmetrics. And that can often give you like per visitor insights, and you can identify people and know what individuals did. You can analyze funnels with more advanced precision and all that stuff. And they have free plans, but they get expensive quick. I think it goes from free to like $150 a month. And for a business generating even a few $1,000, it's probably worth it, because the insights you can pull out of that on how to optimize your funnel are a big deal. And obviously, as you're scaling up, if you're doing 20, 30, 40 grand a month, then you should really, really be using one of these tools.
The next category is dashboarding software, which if you are running a business and you have a lot of different tools, then sometimes you have to go to multiple tools in order to find a lot of the different KPIs or key performance indicators that you're looking for. So sometimes it's more helpful to have a dashboard of some kind. So there's different options out there like Dig My Data or Syfe. There seem to be more and more of these types of tools popping up all the time. What I find is that I like the idea of having a dashboard and being able to look at that data at a glance. But what I find is that if I see some piece of data that I want to drill into, I then have to go over to the tool anyway. So having the dashboard itself probably doesn't do a lot for me, except for give me the ability to kind of publicize some of that data to other people on the team. If you're just using it for yourself, if you're a one-person company, my guess is dashboards are probably not going to help you very much. They look nice and they sound great in theory, but as a business owner, you're probably going to be digging into that data anyway.
Landing pages is another category here, and that'll cost you, let's say, between $20 and $50 a month. So there's Kickoff Labs, you have Lead Pages, you have Unbounce, Instapage. There's a lot of players in this space. ClickFunnels is another one. And it's funny because I never used landing pages when I was hacking away solo on everything, because I would just copy the HTML and I'd modify it and I'd do all that. But now that we're working on a team and we're moving fast and there's a bunch of people doing stuff and we have a marketer who just full-time is running experiments, it really helps to have something where you can just crank out a landing page in like 10 minutes and not have to worry about deploying and having it in source control. And is it on the main website or is it in WordPress? And do I have a plugin? And I mean, it really is simpler to have one of these providers. And so your mileage may vary and each company may do it differently, but I have definitely been sold on the value of using one of these landing page providers. If for nothing else, for some of the templates are really nice, but the speed of implementation, the speed of iteration has accelerated by using one of these platforms.
The next two categories, I'll kind of lump in these together, but they're both sales tools. So essentially you have your basic entry-level CRMs. These will run you $10 to $20. Sometimes that's per user. Sometimes it's just a flat rate. But this is for a basic CRM or a basic sales tool of some kind. And in this category, I would put things like Pipedrive or HiRise or Zoho and many of the basic sales or CRM tools like that. The next level up, once you start to get a lot of information in there and you start to do more advanced things, you want to do any sort of automation, it's almost very similar to email marketing, where you've got basic email marketing, then you've got the advanced stuff. In the advanced category for sales tools, you're probably looking at $50 and up per user. And I would say that Bluetick probably falls into this category, but you'll also find tools like Salesforce or Close.io. The basics of most of these tools is that they help to automate or improve your sales process. And because of that, because of the increased efficiencies that those types of tools provide you, they do cost quite a bit more.
Our next category is demo software, meaning software that helps you give demos to your potential customers. So some free options are things like Skype, Google Hangouts, Join.me, all of which we tried at Drip, and they all had one hang up or another. They're either unprofessional, or a lot of people aren't on Skype, or you have to get approval from their username in order to contact them. And it just feels like you're running a janky service. And so we have since moved on from those. GoToMeeting and WebEx both have free plans. I haven't used either of them, but I know they're popular. We've settled on Zoom, which it's like $15 a month per user, I think. And it's working out quite well. But there's a lot of tools available for this. You just want to find something that is A, professional, and B, gives you a lot of control and allows you to, you know, demo whatever you need. And frankly, you may also want the user, depending on if you're also using this sometimes for onboarding and or some high-end support, you may want the user to be able to share their screen. And that's kind of a nice benefit of a tool like Zoom and GoToMeeting. And so these should be they're anywhere from free up to about $15 to $20 per user, depending on the features you want. You can obviously, you can find some that are like $50 per user per month, but you should be able to get by with a 15 to 20 range.
So now that we've talked about a lot of those different categories, I think we want to talk about two different exceptions that we came up with for this. The first one is that in general, spending money to learn something is probably worth the investment. If you're looking at a specific channel and you're spending money there to try and figure out whether you can use that channel to acquire customers, customers, or you're trying to learn things about your audience, it's very difficult to give guidelines about what specifically you should be spending on these things. Because if you are making $1,000 a month, clearly you don't want to be spending $1,000 a month on your advertising or $10,000 a month on your advertising to learn something. But if you're bringing in $100,000 a month, spending $10,000 to try and figure out whether or not a particular channel is going to work for you to acquire customers, that could be justified. So again, it's just difficult to provide specifics in this particular area because of that. But we do want to point it out as something of an exception to this. Like, it's hard to give guidance about exact numbers for that.
Yeah, it's also hard to give guidance. I mean, pre-revenue is a pretty finite space, and there's not a lot of room there, I guess. You can be specific about it. Post-revenue is anywhere from a dollar a month up to hundreds of millions a month. So it's hard to give all these ballparks, but we're generally talking about businesses that are doing, you know, maybe up to in the seven figures a year. And once you're into eight figures, obviously a lot of stuff changes. I think with that in mind, the other exception to all of this is like headcount, right? Salary for one employee is going to eclipse everything in this list combined. But we just really wanted to talk about tools today and kind of the software tools that you would need to get started up.
So we're running a little short on time here, but we do want to leave you guys with two tips in general about looking at the different services that you're using in your business. The first one is that you should buy tools that do the job that you need done, not tools that you are seeing other successful people or businesses using. A lot of times just using that particular tool that somebody else is using isn't going to make you as successful as they are. It's more about how you use the tool and what jobs you're accomplishing with them as opposed to the tools that you're using.
And the other tip I'll throw out is to buy what you need now, not what you're going to need in the future, because otherwise you're going to be paying for something that you can probably upgrade to at the point when you need it. There's some minor exceptions. If you think about a mixed panel or a Kissmetrics, the more historical data you have, the better. But I think that unless you do have a lot of budget, that dropping $100, $150 a month from the very start is a dubious proposition if you're trying to bootstrap a startup. So in general, I think the best advice is to buy what you need now and not something that you think you're going to need in the next 6 months. That wraps us up for today. If you have a question for us, call our voicemail number at 888-801-9690 or email us at questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Startups and visit startupsfortherestofus.com for a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.